Commission hearing room for the purpose of an informal hearing on case number PU08194. I'm Kevin Kramer, and it's my pleasure to welcome everyone. In attendance with me at the informal hearing are my colleagues, Commissioner Tony Clark and Commissioner Brian Kalk. Also staff members Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, General Counsel, and Patrick Fawn, the Director of Compliance, and a number of other folks in the hearing room as well. But before we take further notice of who's here, any opening comments from my fellow commissioners?
Good afternoon and welcome.
Thanks for coming.
The purpose of today's hearing is, this has been kind of a long case relating to the application and then withdrawal of a certificate of public convenience and necessity by NuStar. I think we'll take appearances for the record and then we'll just enter into it. Mr. Kelsch, perhaps you could handle it from your end.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. My name is Thomas D. Kelsch, and along with me from the Kelsch Law Firm is Todd Cranda. We have Joe Graham with NuStar, and then on the line is Karen Thompson with NuStar.
I'm sorry, we could not hear all of the...
I'll repeat it. I pulled the mic a little closer. I apologize. This is Thomas D. Kelsch with the Kelsch Law Firm on behalf of NuStar. Also with me is Todd Cranda with our law firm. And then in person is Joe Graham. He's the individual who has filed the affidavit. And then Karen Thompson with NuStar is on the telephone line.
Thank you. And then there are others on the line from, I'm guessing, City of Fargo, perhaps?
Correct, Mr. Commissioner. John Dingus and Patricia Madsen. We're in resident in Denver. Eric Johnson is also on the line. Eric is in Fargo.
Hello, Commissioners. Thanks for allowing us to appear by telephonic means.
Our pleasure. Soon we'll be able to do it through interactive video. That would be even better. At any rate, thank you. Others that are in the hearing room, I believe, are just waiting for a meeting that will take place immediately following. Is that correct? Thank you. A couple of things that Tony just asked me, and he's right. There was something filed that he does not have a copy of, nor do I, like yesterday by Fargo. And maybe was it the one asking for? Supplemental legal authority, that's correct. And then there was also a quasi-ruling from the judge, as I recall, allowing practice, unless there would be some objection, which I can't anticipate. Is there any objection from you, Mr. Kelsch?
Mr. Kramer, no, we have no objection to either Pat Madsen or John Dingus.
I don't need it, Ilana, unless you want to see it.
Can you just take a quick look at it?
You can just take a look. I do know it was filed. Oh, Brian's got his.
Yeah, it just didn't make it into my paperwork, yeah. And I didn't know if I...
In fact, I didn't see it either. What I did see was Judge Holberg's, or Judge Wall's email is what I saw referencing it. The other thing that I didn't find, and I quickly printed out the docket card, and it's probably just in there somewhere, but Ilana, you could help me. The letter in December to you from the attorneys from Duncan referenced the staff memo. What staff memo would that have been?
This is Ilana. That would have been the one I did for the admin, which would have been in your paperwork.
Okay.
Not necessarily docketed.
Okay. Though. All right. That, I suspected it might have been an email or something like that that didn't get in the docket. All right. That's fine. Go ahead. No, I understand. That's fine. It concerned me a little bit when I read it being referenced and then wasn't really sure what it was. With that, I think what we will do is, unless staff has anything that they want to kind of brief us on in terms of a little reminder, maybe for the benefit of Commissioner Kalk, frankly, Pat, it might not be bad for you to just kind of remind us of the timeline of what's taking place and what brings us to this point, because it is a rather unique case, Brian. Would that be helpful? Tom, did you want to do that?
I can do that? I'm able to do that if...
That'd be fine.
Please,
that'd
the commission. Yeah. Again, this is Tom Kelsch. Procedurally, what has happened in this case is on April 23rd of last year, 2008, NuStar Pipeline Operating Partnership. The correct name is in the documents, but I'll just refer them to them as NuStar, applied for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. This was done at kind of the recommendation of PSC staff after the NuStar is operating a pipeline that runs from the Amoco, well, Tesoro refinery now, used to be the Amoco refinery in Mandan, and goes, there's a terminal just east of Jamestown, right north of the highway, and then it goes into Minnesota where there are other terminals. The pipeline has been in existence since the Amoco refinery was built back in the 1950s. The city, after NuStar filed its request for a PCNN, the city of Fargo filed a petition to intervene and a request for a hearing because the pipeline does go through the city of Fargo. At that point, our firm was hired by NuStar, and we did some research concerning, I guess, past precedent by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And on July 31st of 2008, after we had done that research, NuStar came to the determination that the PCNN was not necessary for the pipeline. And so we filed a request to allow NuStar to withdraw its application for PCNN. Again, just a little history on the pipeline. It was built by Amoco in 1958 to take the petroleum products, refined petroleum products from the Amoco refinery in Mandan. They do have one delivery to the Burlington Northern Railroad in Mandan, and then there's the terminal in Jamestown, and then beyond that, there aren't any terminals in North Dakota. It goes into Minnesota, I think, ending in Roseville, Minnesota. And as far as we've been able to tell in discussing with the North Dakota Public Service Commission staff, Amoco never had a PCNN for its pipeline. It basically was taking its product from its refinery to other sites down the road. It's starts out as a 10-inch line, and I believe as it 10-inch diameter line, and as it gets into Fargo, it turns into, I believe, an 8-inch a diameter line. In 2001, Tesoro purchased the refinery in Mandan, as well as this pipeline, and continued to operate it as Amoco did. And again, from what we've been able to tell, Tesoro never obtained a PCNN for the pipeline. In 2002, KANEB, K-A-N-E-B, and the correct name is in the documents, purchased the line, this pipeline from Tesoro. And at that time, KANEB did file a tariff with the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and that has been approved. And that was in December of 2002. And KANEB operated the pipeline from 2002 to 2005. I think there were a number of different tariffs that KANEB had filed and were approved by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It's our understanding that KANEB never obtained a certificate of public convenience and necessity for the pipeline. Again, they were transporting Tesoro's refined petroleum products from the Mandan refinery to the one location in Mandan at the BN, and then Jamestown, and then into Minnesota. July of 2005, NuStar acquired KANEB. There was a merger between NuStar and KANEB's parent company. At that time, it was called Valero. And so from 2005, this merged company, Valero, operated the pipeline until 2008, when the name Valero was changed to NuStar. And I think that's kind of where this came into being. When the PSC received notice of the name change, staff had said, well, maybe you should apply for a PCNN, and that was done. That's kind of the general history.
Sure.
If you want me to go into kind of our legal position.
Well, you kind of did, but not in any detail. Mm-hmm. I understand that. No, I think that's helpful. Brian, did you find that helpful? It explains why every time I went to Fargo, I kept thinking, gee, I wish I had the signage contract on this place, because every time I went by, there was a different name on the thing for a few years, though. But at any rate, I understand, and I understand the legal arguments you'll make and that the others will. Eric or John or Patricia, in terms of just sort of setting the table, did that seem appropriate to you, or was there anything you'd want to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Generally, that's correct. We would point out that during the summer, after Fargo filed its request for intervention and hearing, Fargo was approached by NuStar and said, what would you like? And we said, we would like to have some information.
Mm-hmm.
And so we prepared a list of questions that go to our ultimate concerns of safety, and submitted them to NuStar, and thought that would go a long way in resolving our questions concerning this matter. It was after we submitted those questions that NuStar filed to withdraw their request for a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and that circumstance leads to a great deal of skepticism on our part regarding this aged pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that. I know we also received some comment. I was just looking, but I think North Dakota Water Users or somebody commented on the safety issues, and we responded. And it sounded more like citing questions than the PCNN, or citing concerns and PCNN concerns. But nonetheless, that brings us to where we are today. With that, I guess it would seem, well, what's at stake here, just maybe to help Brian a little further, too, is that once Fargo withdrew its PCNN, one might think, well, okay, that settles it. Or once NuStar did, NuStar filed for the PCNN and then, withdrew it, that should be the end of it. Well, it isn't. Once they file, and especially when there's an intervener, of course, then there are parties to the case that have, some opinions, and we need to hear it out. So at any rate, that's what brings us to this point, Mr. Kelsch, if you want to continue then with your legal arguments.
What I'll do, if it's okay with the commission, is just kind of go through generally some legal arguments. And then, as I had indicated before, Joe Graham had submitted an affidavit that the commission and the city of Fargo has. And so after I'm done, we would make Mr. Graham available for questions by staff or by the commissioners or from the city of Fargo.
Sure. Thank you.
If that is acceptable. Part of this is contained in the documents that we filed, but I'll just kind of go through it generally. The issue here is a certificate of public convenience and a necessity required by North Dakota law. And the North Dakota, as the commissioners are aware and staff, the North Dakota Public Service Commission only has the authority that is conferred upon it by the legislature. And so we have to look at what the statute requires in this case. When we were looking at whether this was necessary or not, we thought it was kind of interesting that this pipeline's been in existence for over 50 years, and the statute that talks about the requirement for a certificate of public convenience and necessity indicates that before beginning construction or beginning operation of a pipeline, an entity has to apply for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. Well, of course, certainly this has been in, been constructed for over 50 years and has been in operation for that time. And then even with the different changes of ownership with Amoco and Tesoro and then Canib and then now with NuStar with their new name, no PCNN has ever been required. And since, I believe, since December of 2002, there has been one of the issues is, that has kind of come up and has been raised by the city of Fargo is the issue of, well, you're a common carrier and you filed for a tariff, and Canab did, and also NuStar has done that. But in looking at the memo that was prepared by legal staff for the Public Service Commission, there have been a number of cases that that the PSC has ruled on going back into the 80s and early 90s where pipelines have been common carriers and have filed tariffs and had been common carriers either on the federal level or on the state level. And because they were not engaged in or employed in the within the state of North Dakota in furnishing its their product or services to the public generally, the Public Service Commission has indicated that a certificate of public convenience and necessity was not required, even though there was a tariff and even though they might be considered a common pipeline carrier. And that's our main position is that that we, that NuStar, as it's operating the pipeline, is, and as it's defined under 4903.102 of the North Dakota Century Code, is not engaged in furnishing its product or services to the public generally. NuStar is taking, is basically contracting with Tesoro to ship Tesoro's refined petroleum products to the Tesoro's end users, the BN and Jamestown and into Minnesota. Of course, once you get into Minnesota, the North Dakota PSC wouldn't have any jurisdiction. So really you're only talking about the Mandan outlet and then the Jamestown outlet. The product that is being transported on the pipeline is Tesoro's product. It remains Tesoro's product. All that that NuStar is doing is acting as the conduit for them. There are no other, as you can see by Mr. Graham's affidavit, they have not provided any service for anybody else. This line was built for specifically for the Mandan Refinery, and it continues to operate for the benefit of the Mandan Refinery. Now, there's kind of an argument of, well, what about, I mean, is it, you've listed a tariff, and so is there somebody else that could possibly ship on this that would somehow make it open to the public generally as required for a certificate of public convenience and necessity? Well, the problem with that is you've got one refinery. Basically, it's to provide, the whole purpose of this line was to take product from the Mandan Refinery and get it to points east. Unless you have another refinery built somewhere along the line close enough to be able to hook onto this line, there really isn't much likelihood of this line ever being used by anybody else other than Tesoro. And since Canab and now NuStar has owned the line, that's all it's been. There's been one customer. There hasn't been any others. They haven't sought any additional customers. Nobody has approached them and said, we want to connect somewhere along the line. And so looking at the Western Gas Processors case, the Amoco Gathering Line case, and the Williston Basin Cook case, I think that the precedent that the Public Service Commission has established in cases like this, that as a factual matter, Neustar is not as required engaged in furnishing its product or services to the public generally. They're furnishing its services to one entity, Tesoro, and that's the way it has been and appears to be the way it will be.
Tom, if I can interrupt you for a second. The attorneys for the city of Fargo make the argument that in each of those cases that you had indicated that they saw the difference as the fact that the pipeline owned the gas itself or that it had purchased the gas prior and that it wasn't transporting on behalf of someone else. Do you have a response to that?
There were, and I think there were some differences with the Amoco one was the Amoco was the one who owned the gas and owned the pipeline. But I believe in Cook was purchasing the gas from somebody else and was using a percentage of it for it itself. So I think those are, if you look at all three of them together, it's not just that the way it was with Amoco originally and then Tesoro, where they owned everything. In those cases, Amoco and then Tesoro owned the refinery capacity, they owned the pipeline, and they owned the product. Here, we've done something different. The Neustar doesn't own the refinery and doesn't own the product, but only one entity does own that. So it's a question of, are we open to the public generally, or do we have one contract with one person? And I think we apply both with Western Gas and Williston Basin Pipeline, where they're basically getting product from somebody else and then transporting it and then selling it to a different party. And I think that's enough similar to our case to indicate that we're not open to the public generally.
So your argument would be that even though in the case of Western and the Cook case, according to our staff memo, that while in both those cases, for whatever period of time the pipeline had it, they appear to have owned it. And in the Western case, Western purchased the gas from producers at the wellhead, transported their own gas, and then contracted to sell privately at the other end. And in the Cook case, it looks like similar deal. Cook bought it from producers and then sold its own gas at the end of the pipeline. That the situation that you have, you believe, is closer to that than a common carrier?
In some aspects, I think it's similar or perhaps even better. I mean, Western is buying gas from a number of different people, putting it in the pipeline, and then selling it to a number of different people. In a way, that is more of a, open to the services to the general public than what we're doing here.
Sure,
in this case,
there might be a different contract mix a year from now.
Yeah, where granted, we don't own the gas when we're transporting it, but because it's talking about either the providing the service or the goods, so the goods would be the product, and are we doing this for the general public? And we're really not. We're doing it for one company, one entity, and that's the way it's always been. So I guess we're looking at it as not really a big change from when Amoco and Tesoro actually owned the pipeline. It's basically, it's still their gas, and we're just a conduit from point A to point B.
Tom, what, if you could answer this, when Fargo requested or submitted these questions, did that have anything to do with your decision to withdraw the PCNN, or was it just coincidental?
No, and in fact, we even when we made the motion to withdraw, we indicated to Fargo that we would provide information to them, because some of the information that was requested is confidential in nature. We did provide them with a confidentiality agreement that we have not received back. If they would provide sign the confidentiality agreement, we would be willing to provide maybe not everything that they've asked. There may be some things we can or can't, but certainly, and we have offered to, you know, sit down and meet with the city of Fargo. Certainly we are aware of concerns that the city may have of potential problems, and as a provider of service that is going through the city of Fargo, we would be willing to, you know, discuss certain things with them. But there are a number of in some of the questions they ask that are confidential in nature, both from a federal level and proprietary level with our company. And again, as the statute in 493101 does talk about that a PCNN is required before the beginning of construction or the beginning of operation, and I think that really it's a little different than the argument in 02 that we're not open to the public or generally that we're not engaged in furnishing our services to the public generally, but I think it is very important that and it makes some sense that a PCNN when you are going to construct a pipeline or when you're going to start operating a pipeline beginning of operation, a PCNN may be required, but once that is constructed and once it's operated, I don't think that under that statute that you then can require a PCNN after the fact.
Transfer PCNNs a lot, but this was unusual.
For staff, and tell me if I'm completely off base here or not, but I'm trying to envision potential other impacts on other industries or utilities that are required to have PCNNs. Could a ruling here have any impact on, say, an electric utility, which, you know, is required to have a PCNN to build out a whatever piece of infrastructure to a sole, you know, industry? I don't know. Would a plant being built somewhere, could the argument be made, well, you're not building that out to the public generally, it's only going to serve one specific plant, or is that just like totally non-applicable?
Kind of totally non-applicable, because electric has their own statute, totally separate statute. And telephone has the same statute as pipeline for PCNNs, but telephone is a totally different animal, and you know that. And then the third difference is that pipelines have that common carrier statute, which nobody else has one of those, about if you want to be a common carrier, you do these things, okay? And we do have history saying they go together, common carrier and PCNN go together, and then after that particular ruling by the courts, we had a statutory change about adding that public generally. So that has to mean something. Mm-hmm. And there isn't, in the other two fields, electric and telephone, those things are different. Okay. A different statute altogether.
The question that I had, if I could, Tom, was with new eyes looking at this in the last 2 weeks, really, is it appears that our staff said you should perhaps do this, and being good people, you got going down this road, and all of a sudden something changed, and you decided not to do it. But what burden, if it would it put on the organization to go ahead and file this? Because and also on the other side, the Fargo, it sounds like, and I can't, Fargo folks might have to jump in, but it sounds like, had you not done this, Fargo probably wouldn't even be involved in this right now, because they wouldn't have, it'd been there for 50 years and nothing was going on. So we've kind of got this unique situation going on. But the question I would have is the common carrier status is applicable, I think. And what is it that you really are against by filing this? And I don't think it adds an extra layer of safety by having this. So I'm trying to figure out what it is that you don't like about it, and what is it that Fargo thinks that they get by having this?
Mr. Kalk, I don't know that I can speak for Fargo, but I'll try to answer your question.
I'll jump in.
It's an interesting question, and as Commissioner Kramer said to start with, when somebody applies for a certificate, you might think that they should just be able to withdraw it and not need it. But once they applied and somebody else comes in, then you need to do some type of an action. The real issue is, from a legal standpoint, is it required? If it's not legally required, then whether we applied for it or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, we applied for it, we don't prove our case, you don't issue it. If we don't need it, we still can operate, and it's kind of a moot issue. As you indicated, being the good corporate citizen, when the staff said, well, maybe you should, it's a little bit of gray area, maybe you should apply for this, I think it was initially thought that this has been in existence for 50 years, it's going to be kind of a rubber stamp, and the PCNN will be granted, no problem. Once Fargo intervened and sought a public hearing, they started raising a number of issues, and so, of course, one is a cost issue. Are we going to have a formal hearing, formal discovery, and formal hearing, and go through all that process? And if we don't need to, why should we? And if it's not changing anything, what good is it? When they did ask for a fair amount of information from us in the letter, some of the information certainly we're willing to provide if we got a confidentiality agreement. Some of the information that they asked for was fairly burdensome too, so there would be some costs on the company's part to provide that. If there is a formal hearing, of course, there's formal discovery, and so you go through that formal discovery process, you go through the formal hearing process, and who knows, possibly even appeals. And when we looked at it and discussed it with PSC legal staff and looked at the PSC legal cases, I guess we came to the statutes, we came to the determination that the PCNN was not required. We could be considered a common carrier under 4919, but not be required to have a PCNN under 4903.1. And so it was, like anything, a business decision, a cost benefit type situation. And then the other side is, well, what are we getting for it? There really isn't. We've been operating. The pipeline is in existence. And so is there any benefit for the company to have that PCNN? And what additional benefit does it give to us? And I guess we felt that there really wasn't any additional benefit. We're a common carrier. We're subject to the 4919. We aren't providing our services to the public generally. And so, and we've been in operation, the pipeline's been in operation for 50 years.
All right. With that, I think we should move to Fargo, Mr. Dingus. If you've heard their position as well as have read it, no doubt, and have heard some of the questions, perhaps if there's some points you want to highlight, now would be the appropriate time.
Thank you, sir, that we would like to speak. I think initially discuss the before I give my overall presentation on this, I'd ask Ms. Madsen to step in with the discussion on the Western, the Amoco, and the Cook cases and our view of them.
Sure.
Each of these cases is significantly different than the current situation of a common carrier pipeline moving product that it does not own, but that it says in its communications to the commission is a, I may get this quote wrong, but a vital public necessity or words to that effect. Western Gas Processors, I believe, did not involve a common carrier. He bought some raw natural gas, Western Gas did, processed it, and then contracted to sell that gas to a sole purchaser. This is according to the staff's memo, and they were kind enough to get me those materials. I do not recall in those materials that that contract was pursuant to a public tariff. I think it was a privately negotiated contract with the sole purchaser, as I recall that case. Amoco involved building a pipeline to serve its own interests. So the pipeline moved product owned by the same company that owned the product and was not a common carrier by any stretch of the imagination, didn't file tariffs, just wasn't an issue in that case either. In Williston Basin, there was a common carrier issue, but what the commission said, sensibly enough, was that they were in some sense coerced to be a common carrier. The U.S. Forest Service required them to file a tariff in order to get a permit that they needed to complete a functioning pipeline. Yeah. And the commission said, well, the Forest Service may have made you do that, but you really are not a common carrier, and your filing that tariff was in some sense not voluntary if you wanted to conduct your business. So in all three of those situations, common carrier status was either not an issue or not voluntary. And there was no voluntary holding out to the public at large, as happens when you file a tariff, that if you comply with the circumstances, we will move your product. So it isn't that the pipeline changed, but there's now, where there was once common ownership, there's now disparate ownership. There's now a holding out, and that some of the cases in the supplemental authority we supplied yesterday are about that. It's not what you do, but what you hold yourself out as willing to do that is determinative in public utility law. Filing a tariff means you are willing to take on all comers who meet your terms. So I don't think the three prior cases deal with a situation similar to NuStar's current situation. Their legal situation has changed substantially since that pipeline was built in 1958.
This is Mr. Dingus again, Mr. Commissioner. You're likely will recall, and as will Commissioner Clark, that Fargo was before the commission in 2007 with questions about another pipeline, which was under consideration to be built and which would cross watersheds that are critically important to Fargo's health and public safety vis-a-vis its water supply.
Yes.
During those hearings, a point was made by the opposition that, there's a pipeline that already goes through Fargo that carries petroleum product.
Mm-hmm.
And that was meant to be egg on our faces that Fargo wasn't somehow questioning this pre-existing pipeline. Well, this pre-existing pipeline seems to be the same pipeline that is the subject of the NuStar application that was filed in 2008. Fargo looked at this, had questions, thought that this would be the opportunity to ask those questions and get answers to those questions.
Sure.
Fargo was happy to receive the information from NuStar that they would entertain our questions. We sent them our questions. Yes, a confidentiality agreement was sent back, but on the heels of that, the motion to withdraw the certificate application was made. Fargo has considered, after receiving that motion, that any discussions were at an end and that we were hence in the public Public Service Commission's backyard now, and that's where it would be handled.
Mm-hmm.
Fargo is asking that the application remain before the commission.
Yep.
And that the discovery that we've asked for and perhaps some additional discovery remain so that Fargo can, and this commission can determine whether there's a need for terms and conditions to ensure the safety of this H pipeline. In the application, it was stated that the pipeline is well over 50 years old. The application also states that pipelines of this variety have a 40-year lifetime. That causes us to scratch our heads. We think what is at issue today is whether or not NuStar is the public utility, and we think that they have the burden of, since they're the proponent of their motion to withdraw, to convince you that they are not, and that this matter should be dismissed. We also believe that if there are any disputed facts, that you should retain this matter and set it for formal hearing and formal procedures.
Well, it seems to me, Mr. Dingus, that the disputed facts that matter the most is whether or not NuStar holds itself out generally to the public. I think everything else seems to be pretty well accepted. So I don't know that a formal hearing is required to do that, but you know, perhaps. Just out of curiosity, if it's okay, Mr. Dingus, can I ask the company to respond to the 40-year lifetime point that you make? Is that, do you have any response to that? That this is a 40-year lifespan on this particular pipe, this yep. 50 years old?
This is Joe Graham. I'm not sure. I don't remember us officially saying. I think the City of Fargo made reference to our annual report, talked about.
If I may, it's in the SEC 10-K.
Okay.
Right, well, which is more of an earnings accounting type depreciable life, which doesn't really parallel with how long you can make a pipeline function.
Okay.
Commissioner Culk, I had a question for Fargo that I threw out there before that. Are you saying that if a PCN is issued that you feel that you'll have more safety protections for the watershed and other areas? Is that what you're trying to say here? Or what do you
I think they're saying they have more leverage to discover, but for discovery. Is that right?
I want them to answer that question. See what they
this
say.
Is John Dingus. We believe that if this matter is retained before the commission, that we can get conclusive answers to many of these questions. We have, for example, on the 40-year lifetime, we have the company's own documents, which Mr. Graham now say don't apply, and we have legitimate questions. Those questions we feel need to be answered, and if there are necessary terms and conditions to promote public safety, we believe then that the Public Service Commission should see that those are made part of any certificate.
This is Tony Clark. Getting back to Commissioner Kramer's point, which I think is the important one, is how do we define the public generally, and whether NuStar is holding itself out as such. Make your best fit pitch for why you think that this is, in fact, them holding themselves out to the public generally when there's only one shipper going over it.
Well, give me a moment. We're going to be as concise as we can here.
Sure, sure.
Some of this is legal interpretation from other cases. So this would be in the supplemental authorities we submitted. For example, in the Montana Power Company case, which is paragraph 4 of our submission, as long as the public has the right of use, whether exercised by one or many members of the public, a public advantage or a public benefit accrues, sufficient to constitute a public use. And NuStar itself, in its documents submitted to the commission, states that its pipeline is performing a vital public service. It is essential, publicly essential. So it seems to me that there, another case, for example, is an Illinois case. To constitute a public use, all persons must have an equal right to the use, and it must be in common upon the same terms. However, few, the number who avail themselves of it. That's People versus Ricketts, and that's paragraph 6. And there are some other authorities. I won't belabor them at this point. They're before the commission. We can do a sort of written summary after this informal hearing, if that would be commission. But basically, they hold themselves out. They have held themselves out. And in their 10K, they emphasize that this pipeline intersects another pipeline that could conceivably use to transship. And then they say in their request to withdraw that the North Product System provides an essential public service. That's on page 3. So one customer or many customers, if it's a common carrier, holds itself out and provides an essential public service, their words, then it seems to me it's a public utility.
Would there, if the commission adopts that rationale, would there conceivably ever be a situation in which something isn't somehow benefiting the public if we adopt a sort of public benefits test within a networked industry?
I don't know that there are any guarantees, Commissioner. I think South Dakota summed it up. All common carriers are public utilities, but all public utilities are not common carriers. I think it is hard to imagine a situation where someone that holds itself out is willing to do something for the public on a non-discriminatory basis that it itself says provides a vital public service would not be a public utility. I can't foresee events, but in those combination of facts, it seems like, yes, public utility status would be there.
Of course, at the end of the day, we have to apply our own statutes, which are a little bit different than than some of the other states, although I understand that we can draw on legal theories to get from one spot to another. But at the end of the day, we do have our own statute.
Absolutely.
Any other questions of either party or staff?
This is Karen Thompson. If I may make just one comment on behalf of NuStar.
Sure.
I don't believe there's any document where NuStar asserts that the life of a pipeline is 40 years. I think that I'm not sure what they're referring to out of any SEC filing, but I'm confident that it doesn't say, you know, affirmatively that no pipeline may be used after 40 years. And generally, the life of a pipeline can go on for many, many years, and it really depends on a lot of factors. And, you know, the pipelines are extensively regulated by the federal government. A lot of that is available to the city of Fargo, publicly available.
If I may, I think that's our concern, that I don't believe we ever asserted that NuStar said no pipeline should ever be operated for more than 40 years. We were simply reading their own submission, and they said, and we'll try to find it in a second, that the anticipated lifetime was 40 years. And I'll find that exact citation in just a moment.
Well, you know, one thing, while you're looking that up, one thing I might say, whether it is or it isn't, it is a 50-year-old pipe, and your concern is based on the age of the pipe, and you've taken advantage of this opportunity, this legal proceeding, to seek some information, and what's at dispute are a set of facts that if I understand right, counselors, the city of Fargo is asking for a formal hearing to air and to
We're asking for the sunshine, Your Honor.
I understand that. And you know, Mr. Kelsch, I guess if you could tell me why, how we could deny that, I'd be interested.
Well, the first issue is I'll even kind of go back a step, if I may.
Sure.
When NuStar came to us, basically what had happened is they had applied and Fargo had made the motion to appear. And my first question was, well, what's the history of this pipeline? And we kind of went over the history that we went over earlier today, or this afternoon. And the issue of, well, okay, you filed a KNAB filed a tariff since 2002 with the PSC. At that point in time, KNAB didn't own the it wasn't Tesoro and Tesoro anymore, or Amoco and Amoco anymore. The Public Service Commission certainly understands its rules and regulations. Why didn't the Public Service Commission, if a PCNN is required just because you filed a tariff, why didn't the PSC say, KNAB, get in here and file for a PCNN? You need one. You can't operate without one. And so that was the first thought we had, is, well, why for 6 years has there been no PCNN required? And so we started looking. Then, you know, of course, you looked at the statute, and to say from a standpoint, well, you know, I suppose you could say, well, okay, what's more information? Let's get more information. Let's have a hearing. Who's harmed by that, other than the costs for doing that? But the basic issue that you have to determine before you can even say that is, is this pipeline, does it fit the statute for the requirement of a PCNN? The issues that Fargo was raising, and in fact a number of the questions that they asked, were more citing issues if we were seeking to construct a new pipeline or expand a new pipeline in this area and through Fargo, certainly they would have the right to ask those questions and have a hearing and decide that issue. This isn't the case. It's an existing pipeline. It's been in existence, and it's been operating. And the PSC doesn't have procedures to say, well, if you're, you know, once you've sited a pipeline and it's been in existence for 40 years, now you got to come back in and get recertified or have reapproval or anything like that. So you're bound by the statutes that you have. And the other citations, I think that one of the commissioners made the comment, Commissioner Clark, I think that you know, you're bound by North Dakota law, not South Dakota law, and not Montana law. And when the legislature changed the law that we're talking about and put in the wording that to be a public utility, you must be engaged in furnishing the product or services to the public generally, and that's separate from the common carrier statute. So there is a total separate common carrier statute. So you can be a common carrier, but not be a public utility. And I think that is what the position that Newstar is saying is: yes, we're a common carrier, but we're not providing our service to the public generally. And unless you can say that yes, Newstar is providing the service to the public generally, we don't need a PCNN. You can't require us to have a PCNN. And why go through that hearing process?
I agree, and that's pretty compelling. The thing I'm struggling with a little bit is that whether you held yourself up to the public generally is the fact that's in dispute, and the party's asking for a formal hearing on that, and I'm not sure how we deny them that opportunity. Then I get your argument that we shouldn't be here in the first place, perhaps. I'm just kind of remembering as you're talking here, because this has been with us for so long. And when I say this, I don't mean just this case. I mean that pipeline, and I quipped a little earlier or at the beginning that it's changed names so often. I think, if I remember right, Pat, what really was at stake several years ago was, why aren't we getting PCNN transfer applications? Didn't we at one point say, who are these Valero people? Who are these KNAB people? And the sign keeps changing, and we never get a PCNN transfer app. Isn't that what first kind of sparked some of this?
In part, there were name changes without the commission ever knowing.
Sure.
You know, because the only indication may be a tariff filing with the FERC. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the fact that we didn't catch it for 6 years, I'm not sure that there are other situations where we have the same issue too, whether companies need PSCNN. And sure. So The commission may, I mean, it did come to light when we learned of another name change.
Another name change. All right. Is there anything else as we wrap up that hasn't been said that somebody wants to say? Because my sense is we're going to have a work session on this with our staff.
It's an interesting case, and even thinking about the nature of certificates of public convenience and necessity and what they're for. I mean, it's as you said, it's clear if we were citing, if this was a citing application, it would clearly, you'd be in front of us and the commission would have all its authority. Clearly, investor-owned utility companies need CPCNs because they are operating in the public's convenience and necessity. It's why they're granted. Not that long ago, the commission went to the legislature and removed the certificate process for telecommunications companies because of it, because it wasn't operating in that monopoly-type environment. Pipelines, you know, I guess if they're truly holding themselves out to the public and there's an intrastate tariff, then it might be one thing, but perhaps a lot different in this situation, maybe. I mean, I think we just do need to make that determination. I know I'll be talking to staff about it quite a bit over the next few days or weeks, whenever it takes to get to our work session, because it does seem to be the one and sole question about whether this is publicly held, that the company has publicly held itself out to do business.
And I think there is one of the comments that Ms. Madsen had made about public benefit. Certainly, we think that our product is a public benefit. I mean, people need oil, they need refined gas products, but there is a difference between the public benefit and public, open to the public and being used by the public. So I don't think that those are exactly the same arguments. But
sure. All right. If there's nothing else, we have spent an hour, and we'll close the hearing on case number PU08194. Ms. Thompson, Ms. Madsen, Mr. Dingus, and Mr. Johnson, thank you. We'll hang up now.
Mr. Kramer?
Yes.
Or Commissioner?
Yes.
If the commission would find it useful, we would be happy to submit simultaneously with the New Star attorneys a written summary of our arguments. We also have located that citation in the 10-K regarding the 40-year age of the pipeline. We'll leave that.
Well, I think it would be helpful, Mr. Kelsch, if you'd like to do the same, you know, obviously. You're welcome to. I will say that one of the disadvantages I had today is I had not seen the supplemental filing that came in yesterday, so I didn't have that opportunity. Mr. Dingus, had I, you know, I might have been a little more caught up too. But a very short summary brief would be fine.
When do you want
something
that?
in the page limit of say 5 pages?
Yes, I'd say at the most.
Okay, and the date that you'd like to have these simultaneous submissions?
You know, my sense is we're not going to get to this real quickly. So, you know, I would think a week or two. Whatever works for you guys, but yeah, by the end of this month,
last working day of the month,
we're in the middle of a legislative session, and our time is so small in small pockets that.
All right, so then the last business day of the month, then.
That would be fine, Tom. Is that okay? All right, great.
That'd be the 30th of
Friday,
the 30th of November or January.
January.
Yeah.
I wish I could go back a couple months.
January.
If we go back 2 months, it could snow a whole bunch.
Yeah,
again.
Snow more.
Yeah.
More cold.
Thank you, everyone. We'll close the hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, no, it's been distributed. I just had it. Just didn't get the dotted bar.
Hey, Brian.
Okay, read that sentence.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah. All warmed up for you. My copy or yours?
Yeah, that is my.
Good afternoon. This is Tim. Hi, this is Tim. Hello?
Okay, all right, Tim, you're there now?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Is Tim the only person joining us on phone?
Yeah, that's Tim Rigelstead from Otter Tail.
Yeah. Great. And we are we going to broadcast this or
yeah,
we should broadcast it. We don't need to tape it. We don't have a case on it or anything. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. It is about 2:40 in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room. This is a meeting between